Lady Justice is a true crime podcast, therefore deals with incidents of violence, disturbing imagery, and explicit content. Listener discretion is advised. The Lady Justice podcast wishes to offer their deepest condolences to the victims' families and offers thanks to those who work in emergency services. Hello, my lovelies, and welcome to another episode of Lady Justice, a true crime podcast. Lady Justice is a weekly podcast that covers fascinating cases from both the past and the present. My name is Chantelle, and I'm your friendly true crime junkie with slight caffeine addiction issues. I hope this episode finds you all feeling well and that you've had a great week. I apologise for the lateness of this episode, but my mic broke, so I had to wait for a new one to be delivered. As usual, before I get into this week's episode, I do want to ask you guys a huge favour. Please support this podcast by subscribing, rating, and leaving a review where you can. And because sharing is caring, I want you to tell everyone you know. Share it on social media and get the word out. It makes the world of difference. If you'd like to contact me about anything, please feel free to do so via social media or by my email, which you'll find in the show notes. The show also now has a Patreon, which you can find a link to on social media and in the show notes. Alternatively, you can just pop along to patreon.com/ladyjusticepod, like this week's new patron, Tom Wright, and get yourself a shout out and up to 2 exclusive episodes per month. I would also like to take the time to remind you that the biggest True Crime Weekend is coming to London in June 2021. CrimeCon UK in partnership with Crime and Investigation. The event is totally COVID safe, with a backup date booked for September if needed, and you lucky humans can get 10% off ticket prices with the code LADY. I will be there on Podcast Row, and I can't wait to meet everybody, so make sure you book your tickets now before they run out. This week, before the Act of Kindness, we have a promo for a wonderful podcast. I understood that reference. Hosted by the delightful Robin Ross, they take on all things trending in pop culture, including films, games, and comics. They have something for everyone, and you can hear from them later. Now, in this week's episode, in a completely motiveless murder, a 12-year-old schoolgirl became a victim of just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. So, without further ado, here is some background on the location and time frame of this case. We are heading back to the year 1960. Queen Elizabeth I was again a new mother, this time after giving birth to Prince Andrew in February. The Conservative government was led by Harold Macmillan, and it was the year the British people saw events such as the end of conscription, the first successful kidney transplant to take place in Edinburgh, and the first ever episode of Coronation Street air. Famous folk to be born in this year include Nigella Lawson, Ian Hislop, and Def Leppard bassist Rick Savage. We are taking a trip to Stapleford in Nottinghamshire, located just 6 miles from Nottingham. It lies on the border of Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire and has a rich and ancient history dating back at least until Saxon times. As always, all my sources will be listed in the show notes. The Greaves family lived at 18 Sunnyside Road, Inham Nook, Chilwell, a neat-looking semi-detached property. The head of the family, Donald, worked as the street lighting superintendent for the Beeston and Stapleford Council and was a well-respected man. The family were known in the local churches and were willing to help anyone who would cross their path. The Greaves also had a 12-year-old girl called Angela, the sole daughter of the couple, as she was a hard-working, happy and bright girl who was described as lovely by all. On the morning of Tuesday the 14th of June 1960, the girl prepared for her day at St Mary's Convent School, located at the bottom of Acton Road, Long Eaton. She had sports that day and packed in her bag her gymnastics clothing and tennis racket. When she went for breakfast, she played with her young boxer pup, Maverick, and checked how the morning looked before deciding that the weather meant she could cycle the 3.5 miles to school. At 8 a.m., she said goodbye to her parents, who noted that she seemed very happy that day, as they saw her ride off on her bicycle towards her friend's home, who she would normally cycle with. When she arrived at the home of her friend, she was greeted and told the girl was not feeling too well. She was still going to go to school, but had decided to take the bus that day. Angela smiled and said she was still going to cycle, and said she'd see her friend when they were in class, and began to take her usual shortcut route along the country lanes before school. It was only a 20-minute ride, and a nice, mild morning, and Angela was a fan of the outdoors. The Greaves couple went to work as normal, and they would normally return just about 5 in the evening. Angela, when finishing school, would let herself into the home. She was a responsible young girl, and she enjoyed her time in the home alone. The family's arrangements meant that she could let herself in and begin to prepare the tea every school night, and Angela took this as being seen as a bit more of a grown-up. The rest of the young girl's spare time was taken up playing with friends or attending the St. Leonard's Riding School, where she found a real passion for riding. On that day, however, when her parents returned home, they saw their home empty, with tea not prepared, and they felt uneasy. Angela was nowhere to be seen by 5:45 p.m., and the young girl's parents knew that this was completely out of character. It's every parent's worst nightmare. They called upon their neighbours, who in turn also went out to search the known places that Angela and her friends would spend time, including the promenade of shops across from her home. Her parents set out along her normal route with the friends of the family, yet couldn't find anything, even stopping by local public houses, thinking the girl had maybe taken a fall or had broken her bike and was worried to go home with it damaged. Yet they couldn't find any sign of the girl or her bike. At 6:10 p.m., they made a call to the police and notified that Angela Greaves was missing. Within half an hour, the police had gathered along the route the girl would normally take to school. To give an idea how small-knit this kind of community was, and how quickly word spread, within a few minutes of the police in the area, a journalist had already started to take quotes from local residents. One such was from the owner of the Magpie Pub, Mr. Sidney Gills, which was on the road that Angela would take. He told the reporter, "I don't really know what's happening. Two people came in here earlier to ask if I'd seen a girl. I think they were the parents. Then the police arrived." When the police arrived, they had taken over the pub as a temporary headquarters for the search for the 12-year-old. They had done this under the orders of lead investigator Chief Superintendent Cooksley, who began searching the fields around Darkey Lane, which backed onto the Magpie Public House grounds. This was significant because just before 9 a.m, a 36-year-old man named Cyril Fien was on his way to his brother's home to go looking for cabbages. As he was on his way, he spotted along the hedges in Darkey Lane a small girl's bike, a bike pump, a tennis racket, and some clothing. At the time of this discovery, the police believe they likely came from a student at one of the local schools and called upon them to no avail. That school day at St. Mary's, they did ask their students. However, Angela Greaves had never made it to school that day, so the items went unclaimed and stored at the station. That was until the disappearance of the girl was discovered later that day. Officers searched the fields and conducted house-to-house inquiries in the area before bringing in dogs with PC Harrison and PC Hill to help with the search. It was starting to get dark at 8:50 p.m. when Police Constable Haslam began searching the shrubbery just 35 yards from where the bike had been found. And that's when he saw the body of a child laid out. The little girl was sprawled out, and her clothes showed a clear struggle. The front of her uniform was soaked in blood, and on her neck, evidence showed a severe and deep cut. She was carefully removed from the scene after Dr. Russell confirmed death, whilst the Wakefield-based pathologist, Dr. David Price, was called to conduct a post-mortem. Donald Greaves was called upon by the police, who confirmed that the bike and the other items found earlier that day were his daughter's. He feared the worst, and the family were in shock. Investigators would call upon their vicar to comfort the family, as Donald was escorted to Stapleford Mortuary at 1 a.m. He viewed the child's body and once again confirmed it was his daughter Angela. Police now knew for certain that Angela had gone missing between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. when she would be travelling to school. They knew the little girl had no enemies, and from the initial door-to-door inquiries, they knew that there was a man on a motorbike or a motor scooter in the area near Darkey Lane, who clearly stood out. He was described by witnesses as a burly man with unkempt, dark, curly hair. One officer knew that description and called upon the man's haunting spots, and found their suspect down on the banks of the River Trent, about 2.5 miles away. The officer called upon him and asked him to come with him to the station for further questioning, to which the man agreed. At 4:30 a.m. on the 15th of June, whilst in the custody of Stapleford Police Station, the man made a full written confession and had identified the murder weapon. When he was cautioned by Detective Chief Inspector Clifford Lewis at 5:10 a.m, he repeated yet again that Angela had her throat cut. The man, matching the witness description, replied to the officer, "It is quite true." He would be formally charged later that day. He would reply his name as Michael Thwells, 21 years of age, of 2 Upper Orchard Street, Stapleford, and employed as a coal man. The post-mortem results were to confirm the young man's story, to which we will get to later, with Dr. Price stating the cause of death as being due to shock, hemorrhage, and embolism, due to an incised wound of the throat. At an inquest later, Nottingham District Coroner Mr. Mack would accept this cause, even with Michael Thwell's refusal to attend the proceedings. And Donald Greaves would push for more information, asking Dr. Price just how that cut was made. He was told it was made from the front, and if she had been conscious, she would have seen the knife. Donald Greaves, with the strength of an ox, would appear at every hearing and court appearance booked, even the ones lasting just 30 seconds, such as on the 20th of June. In that appearance, Thwells dressed in a grey suit and a blue collarless shirt and white plimsolls, was led into the dock, handcuffed and flanked by 2 police officers. He would stand for just a few seconds as he confirmed his identity and told that he would be remanded at Lincoln Prison until a trial could be set. Donald watched on as Thwell's mother sat behind her son, accompanied by another, crying and calling for her boy when he was to be led away. Greaves would also make a statement to thank the police, stating with a slight tremor in his voice, "I would like to thank all the police for what they have done and for their consideration." The murder of an innocent schoolgirl would attract national attention, and the Daily Mirror would dedicate a full front page to the pretty girl on June the 16th. In the photo, she was wearing one of her most loved clothing items, a bridesmaid dress she wore to her aunt and uncle's wedding in 1957. Clothes such as this were specially made. You couldn't just pop into a shop for a fancy new dress, and it showed with her beaming with pride. Reports would come to how loved she was by all those that knew her. The mother superior of her school would say about Angela that she was bright academically and very popular with the other girls. She was very fond of sport, nature, swimming and animals, especially horses. Angela Greaves was laid to rest on Saturday the 18th of June in a well-attended service. The police had cleared the streets between her home on Sunnyside Road to Chilwell Parish Church, where along the procession route, neighbours and well-wishers were seen to line the streets. Over 150 people filled the church as Reverend Warburton led the tributes to the bright and popular young girl. The whole building was filled with multicoloured roses as donated by Mr. Gregory of Chilwell, and a prominent large floral horseshoe wreath of red roses and blue ribbon stood proud, showcasing one of Angela's real passions. Amongst those to attend were 34 girls from her school and the Mother Superior, who'd made arrangements for her friends to pay their respects. A notable young lady was also seen, a resident at number 9 Sunnyside Road, Angela's best friend, Ellen Mokes, who was seen to be incredibly upset. Many council officials had also come to the service and joined in with the hymns, "Loving Shepherd of Thy Sheep," and "All Things Bright and Beautiful," the last of which the heartbroken mother stated perfectly described her little girl's outlook on life. The 12-year-old girl was interned at Beeston Cemetery, wearing her now iconic bridesmaid dress. Her riding crop and cap were placed on her coffin as mourners left 81 wreaths by her graveside. The trial of Michael Thwells was held at Nottingham Assize, held in the Shire Hall, beginning on November 14th. Mr. Justice Havers would oversee as the defendant gave his plea of not guilty, before Mr. Arthur James, Queen's Counsel, was to begin his opening address to the court. He would state that the brutal slaying of Angela was, quote, completely motiveless, and then outlined how not only had the accused admitted guilt, not only to his mother, but to the police. The judge and jury would hear of a conversation that was overheard in a cell passage at the police station when he was being held at Stapleford before he had been charged. This conversation took place between Mr. Thwells and his own mother. It was stated that it recalled as follows. "You didn't do it, did you, son?" "Yes, mum, it was me." "Why did you do it?" "I don't know, mum." Excerpts of the statement that Thwells had made to detectives on the morning of June 15th would also be read. Thwells had told the Detective Dyer, who had spoken to the young man in his tent pitched on the banks of the River Trent just after the discovery of Angela's body. "Is it about the girl? I was going along on my motorbike on the side of the ditch. She fell in the ditch and I ran off. I ran after her and carried her into the bushes. She was struggling. I just strangled her. Then I cut her throat. I will be straight." Detective Dyer was also to testify at the trial, stating that he'd only asked 2 questions of the defendant before that remark was made. It was because of this he would also remove certain articles, later identified by the accused as those used in the murder, from his makeshift space. The court was also told of how during his initial interviews, Thwells declared how in fact he'd come across the schoolgirl. "I rode at the side of her and never spoke to her. I just pushed her. She fell in the ditch and started to run, and I ran after her. I got into the hedge bottom, then I strangled her and used a knife. I cut her throat." He left the girl under the bushes, shoved his weapons into one of the 2 bags attached to his vehicle, and went for a ride up and down the river on his motorbike, listening to his wireless radio. He then returned to his tent and placed the knife under his pillow and changed his bloodstained shoes, and then, quote, "went to the pictures in Long Eaton." In the courtroom, the exhibits of the 2 knives and shoes recovered from the man's tent and testimony was also given by Inspector Howard, who was present when Michael admitted they were his. Three witnesses who had been identified by the police had also testified to seeing Thwells astride his motorbike in the area of the Bulk Lane and Darkey Lane junction between 7:20 and 8:50 a.m. on the 14th of June. Frederick Cox, Clifford Houston, and Frieda Terrell also said he was wearing a notable item of clothing. A peaked cap, ordained with various military and other memorabilia badges. Medical evidence was also produced by the Home Office pathologist, Dr. David Price, who stated the cause of death and confirmed that when he examined the body, he believed the death of Angela had occurred between the hours of 6 a.m. and 12 noon. Soil was also taken from under where the young girl's body had been laid and tested against the soil that had been discovered in the turn-ups of Michael's trousers, which he was wearing at the time of his arrest. This soil would scientifically place Thwells at the exact spot. Forensic blood analysis would also take place on Michael's jacket, riding gauntlets, and knife, which all contained a significant amount of blood. This was still relatively early in using forensic measures in crime, and they could only determine which blood group the blood had belonged to. The blood discovered was found to be of blood group A. Michael Thwell's blood group was blood group O. Angela Greaves was blood group A. For Thwell's defence, it was stated he was not guilty, not because he had not killed the girl, yet because he was not mentally fit. His counsel, Mr. German, was to bring forward three doctors who described the 21-year-old man in the dock as having a mental age of 5 or 6. They agreed he was suffering from a mental abnormality and that he was subnormal and childish. Dr. C. Fish, the medical officer at Lincoln Prison, was to go as far as to say that he believed that Michael Thwells should be detained for the safety of others, as there would be no cure to his mental health issues. Other evidence provided for the defence included how he came from a not-so-desirable family, with Detective Chief Inspector Lewis calling his home squalid, and it showed that there was a real lack of care in all aspects of the young man's life. There was also evidence produced that he'd previously been a patient on the grounds of his mental health in earlier years. The jury would deliberate for only an hour, in which they returned and rejected the prosecution's verdict of guilty of murder. Mr. Justice Havers was to accept the decision of not guilty due to diminished responsibility. This meant that Thwells was to escape the death penalty, which was in operation in England at this time. Thwells was found guilty of manslaughter, and his sentence was passed on Tuesday the 22nd of November, where he was to be given a life sentence and told he would be detained at the notorious Rampton Secure Hospital. And that's the end of the case. I can find no details as to if Michael Thwells was ever released or having passed, but if he is to be alive today, he would be in his 90s. The real tragedy of this case is 12-year-old Angela, who simply was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. The little girl who loved nature, her friends and family, would never even get to be a teenager. It's now time to cheer up a little and hear from another podcast. And this week, it's the delightful Rob and Ross from I Understood That Reference. I will leave it up to them.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ross, and what's the crack?
And I'm Rob, and this is our podcast, I Understood That Reference.
We cover all corners of the pop culture spectrum, including movies, comics, which is my favourite, games, and everything in between.
With our own unique mix of games, trivia, a little insight, all wrapped up in Irish accents.
And of course, the tin whistle.
So get up them stairs and download this podcast into your ears.
I'm Ross.
And I'm Rob.
And this has been I Understood That Reference. Available on Spotify, SoundCloud, Podchaser, and whenever else decent podcasts are available.
Yay!
As always, if you would like to support their podcast, everything you need to show your support is in the show notes. Now, we have just enough time to see if we can balance out those scales somewhat with a small act of kindness. This week, I wish to highlight a fundraiser by Paul from the True Crime Enthusiast podcast, who sadly lost his father just before Christmas. I have linked the fundraiser page for Macmillan Cancer Support, who, if you don't know, are a fabulous charity who support those who have been diagnosed with cancer in all aspects of their lives, and it makes the biggest impact. There is no minimum to donate, and if you cannot donate any money, that's okay. If you could just share the page, it would mean an awful lot. With that, go be good people, go be kind, go be safe, and most importantly, go be happy.